AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello, I'm Jim Cornell, and this is the WalkingPost.com podcast. WalkingPost.com is the news website dedicated to walking, with all the latest on festivals, trails, books, gear, travel, and more. This podcast is airing on Friday, April the 4th. Seems like yesterday it was Christmas, and here we are at Easter. That means Halloween stuff in the shops in the next week. I also missed yet another eclipse last weekend. They always seem to plan them for days with cloud. And before I ramble on about other things, the subjects of our two conversations this week with three guests are the March. And no, the podcast audio isn't stuck. And also about the IML. Hopefully you're suitably intrigued to stick around. It was a very uneventful week here. Maybe that's a good thing. Lots of podcast interviews for various podcasts and a little bit of filming and trying to get my slow internet fixed. I really don't like watching sport when it looks like you're watching it through frosted glass. Although the way my favourite teams play, maybe not seeing it would be a good thing. Did you tune in to the podcast last week? Hopefully you did. Both of the conversations were about walking festivals, Bristol and Newton Stewart. I really need to try to get to some of these walking festivals. I always get inspired and want to go, and then work gets in the way. Having said that, Newton Stewart is less than 30 miles from where I live, so I really have no excuse. I do have a few interviews already set up for next week, but I always welcome suggestions for guests or for news for us to publish. You can reach out via walkingpost.com or just email Jim at walkingpost.com. I did get an email about a new hiking trail in Asia this week, so let's see if that one turns into a podcast interview. As always, before we get to those conversations, let's go over some of the headlines of the news articles we had on walkingpost.com from this past week. Cumbria is launching a new website for walking, wheeling and cycling. A new book called Holy Dirt has been published, and it's about the Camino. And hopefully we have an interview with the author in the next week or so. Garmin has launched its premium Garmin Connect Plus subscription service. I guess it's kind of like Disney Plus, only you get to watch people's fitness stats. Not really. EcoFlow has come out with some new portable power options. Suunto has introduced Aqualite headphones. And a popular walking festival is returning to Staffordshire Moorlands. A disused railway line in Derbyshire is going to be transformed into a greenway. We had an article on the Chesterfield Area Walking Festival, and a new two-day coastal trail is being developed on Cape Breton, which is the island at the top of Nova Scotia in Canada, and that's a part of the iconic Cabot Trail that's well worth a visit. You can read all of those articles and more at walkingpost.com. Okay, time for this week's interviews. Have you ever heard of the IML Walking Association? Well, if not, you might want to take part in some of their accredited walks in various countries throughout the world. Canada was just added to the list with a walk in the capital, Ottawa. The last time I was in Ottawa was in a blizzard, and with the wind chill, it was minus 51. The stupid things you do when you're covering hockey. IML stands for International Marching League, as that's its origins, but it's really just a walking association. To tell us more about the IML, its walks and more, is Stefan Orening from Sweden, who's the president of the organization.
So I wanted to get things started then. Maybe if you could tell me a little bit about the history of the IML and its origins.
If you had been a little earlier in your search for the facts about IML, we would have had the last of the original founders still in the board until 2023. That was Mark Miller. He was one of the founders back in 87 when the IML was first founded. Well, there were walks from 8 different countries. Well, they thought that we might do something together to promote interest and to get people to go to each other's walks in the various countries. From the beginning, the first and original walk is, of course, the Nijmegen walk, started more than 100 years ago. But, during the 60s and 70s, there were a lot of walks started in countries in Middle Europe mostly. But in the middle of the 80s, there were contacts taken between some of the walks. And it ended up with 8 of these walks forming the Marching League, as they were called. Now it's called the IML Walking Association. So the object of it then and still is to promote walking and to make people from various countries and cultures meet through walking in those countries. Now we have 30 members, and it's not individuals that are members in the IML. It's a walk, it's an event that is the member. It started out with 8 founder members in 87, and it has grown little by little until now we have 30 walks who are members at the moment. We got our latest member this year, in fact. It was a walk in Ottawa, Canada, that became a member in January. So they will have their first walk as a member in October.
When you said that there are 8 originally, is that, could you have 2 walks from the same country as members, or is it 1 country and then sub walks within that?
It's possible to have more than 1 walk from the same country, but it's rare. We have that now. We have 2 walks in the US, 2 walks in Japan, and 2 walks in China. But we have no countries in Europe that has or more than 1 walk. It's possible technically and theoretically in our constitution, but it seems that the original walk in the country likes to stay the sole member from that country. Well, if I speak for our walk in Sweden, we have that as a bonus. We could say to the authorities that we are the only walk in Sweden that is a member of this organization, and that makes us a bit more unique, and we tend to get more financial aid and things like that, rather than if we are 1 of 10 walks. I know that there are, particularly in walking countries like Netherlands, Germany, Belgium, there are several walks. We have already 1 walk in Germany, and we have 1 that wants to be a member, and they are applying for membership. We have a process for becoming a member. We have to discuss it at our annual meeting, and they get to be a candidate, and they will be evaluated from 2 people from the organization, and then there will be a vote again on the next annual meeting, and then they will become a member. So you don't become a member in 2 weeks' time, so it takes a while.
We were talking about the way that walking is slightly different in different countries. It seems that a lot of the origins of some of the ones in Central Europe come from marching. I wonder if you could explain why the events have kind of evolved differently in different places.
A lot of the events has a military origin, but that varies quite a lot. Our walk in Sweden, for example, has no military origin or no original connection. It was started by a sports club to commemorate a journey made by the scientist Linné. And others have more of a military connection. We don't have any particular rules for what organization is to organize the event. It could be military, and it sometimes is, and it could be a sports club, it could be a Rotary club, or, well, it varies quite a lot. But to begin with, was more military than it is today. We still have quite a number of military groups walking together, practicing marching, and having it as a sort of exercise. In some countries, they have a soldier's test. You have to be able to walk 30 kilometers with your packing, and they are practicing for that. And we have the major event in Nijmegen, and there are a lot of military groups there.
Does that affect the recreational walker, I guess? They don't feel like they don't belong if they're not military?
No, I don't think so. I think we have people from with uniforms and people without uniforms. And, well, they are both participants of the walk. So I don't think that people feel left out if they walk without a uniform or and the other way around. I think we can coexist in the events.
And what are the events? Are they day long? And could you explain a little bit about how they
happen? Yeah, all are multi-day events. So to be a member, you have to have at least 2 days of walking. Most of the events are two-day events, but we have some three-day events and some four-day events. For example, Nijmegen and the walk in Castlebar in Ireland, they are both four-day events. And also the walk in France is a four-day event. The most common thing is a two-day event. To get your stamp, which is the IML thing, you get a stamp when you have finished the 2 days or 3 or 4 days of walking. And then you have to have walked at least a 20K per day. And you have to walk all the days of the walk to be able to get the stamp. If you are just a one-day event, or if you have distances of below 20K, you're not able to be a member of the IML.
And are they circular or linear walks? Or?
It can be both. Mostly there are circular walks, but there are cases where there are linear walks and for example, you could go by bus. For example, in Norway, you go by bus to the starting point and you go from there back to the finish where you really started. We in Sweden also have a distance when we drive people out the buses and they go back to the finish area.
Are there lots of people that take part in these?
It varies quite a lot. We have the Nijmegen in Europe as the biggest one. You know, there are between 40 and 50,000 participants there. And we have, I attended a walk in China, in Dalian. The first day of that walk, they said it was about 100,000 participants. The first 10 kilometers was like walking in a filled elevator. I didn't count all of them, but I can't contradict him on that point. It might have been. It was the largest amount of people I've seen in one time at the starting point there in China. So it varies from that until down to a few hundred participants at the smaller walks. It really depends, well, mostly on the local participation, but there are a number of people that go around the world and do these IML walks to earn the medals and the other awards that we have in our award system.
100,000 people in China, that would be a lot of awards.
There were local participants, and they did just that day. So they didn't care about having the award after the 2 days, because the second day was a much smaller number of participants.
As an individual, do you have to be a member of the IML, or do you just register for the IML walk?
Yeah, you register by buying this passport, the IML passport. And once you have done that, you collect your stamps in your passport. And through these stamps, you earn the various awards. And so you're not really a member as an individual. You are a participant and you collect your stamps. You are an IML walker, but you don't have to pay a membership each year or like that. But you go to as many walks as you like.
Do a lot of people do lots of different ones?
Yeah, I would say that there are, it's a guess, but maybe around 500 people are going to various countries.
I suppose it helps when you have ones that are relatively close together. It would be a bit more difficult, I guess, to do the US and Canada and China, Japan.
Yeah, it is. The IML is divided into two regions. We have the European region and we have the Pan-Pacific region. We have 20 walks in the European region and 10 walks in the Pan-Pacific region.
Do you see that growing within Europe and within other countries?
We like to grow, but at a reasonable pace. At the same time, as we want to include more countries, the members are keen to go to new countries, because that is one of our goals, to go to new cultures and new countries to meet new people. But at the same time, we don't want too many members, so there will be clashes. We have an event calendar where we try to avoid clashes the same weekends. Sometimes it can't be avoided, but we try our best not to make them clash. For example, our walk in Sweden, we always have that the last weekend of April, and then we know that no other European walk will have their event at the same weekend.
Are they spread out throughout the year?
Yeah, it's mostly May, June, August, September, October. That's the main months. And then there are some, for example, we have one of the American walks is in February. We have a few walks in Pan-Pacific in November. For example, Indonesia is in the third weekend of November. And well, we have had the walk in Australia just this weekend.
You mentioned the awards. Is that the big motivation for people, or is that?
It is. Those who are keen walkers are also keen collectors of awards. You can collect medals of various kinds. You start with the bronze, silver, gold, and then you build up from that. You have a gold with laurels, you have a blue medal, gold medal, and blue with laurels. And we have medals up until 600 walks.
Has anybody reached that yet?
We have one that is closing in, but we haven't anyone that has reached the end of the award system. And then we have some other awards. For example, you could be a European walker when you have walked in 8 different European countries. We have a Pan-Pacific walker. We have a global walker. And we have a new award for this year that we call the Universal Walker. And then you have to have walked in all the members' walks. All the 30 you have to have done to be a Universal Walker.
Anybody close to that one?
I think so. Since we got a new member in January this year, and they are holding their first walk as a member, it means that on that walk, if you have done all the others, you could be a Universal Walker at that. And I think, I guess that will be somewhere between 5 and 10 people that will claim that award in October. But we'll see.
Oh. I love the idea of the passport and getting stamps towards medals, and the various events around the world look great too. Not so sure about all the people at the one in China that Stefan was mentioning though. The last time I was in Spain, I did a part of the Camino del Norte, just outside of Bilbao, and I have never seen so many people on a trail in my life. At one point, I thought I'd count people, and in 1 minute, going in the opposite direction to me, I counted 70 people. That is not including the people going the same direction as me. I can honestly say I didn't enjoy it one bit. The first part was nice and quiet, but the closer to Bilbao, the worse it got. And that night, I got gastroenteritis. Fun trip. Moving right along from the International Marching League, we're talking about the March. Who says we don't plan these podcasts? If you know the eastern part of England, you may have heard of a small town called March in Cambridgeshire. Many years ago, some students thought that they should have a walk, or a march, from March back to Cambridge, and to do it in March, and so the March was born. There have been one or two small gaps here and there over the years, but in 2025, there was a good turnout of more than 40 people as the event goes from strength to strength. To tell us about the history of the event, which includes pigeons and ending up in Ely by mistake, are one of the organisers of that first event in 1979, Jonathan Partington, and current organiser Colin Bell, who is closing in on Jonathan's record of 23 completed marches, with 19 of his own. In the interview, the first person you will hear from in the conversation, other than me, is Jonathan.
And I guess to get things started, the most obvious question seems to be, what are the origins of the March?
Yes, it began in 1979. The five people who did the first march, we were all research students in mathematics at Cambridge. In fact, I submitted my PhD thesis later that same year. And it started off as a bit of a joke. We thought, ha, 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 wouldn't it be funny to have a thing called the March, because of the sort of the pun. Then suddenly we sort of decided to do it. We went up to March by train from Cambridge, the five of us. We walked back. The route was rather different in those days because the railway line between March and Chatteris is now built over. It's now a very busy A141. But it was still a disused railway line in those days, so we could actually walk along that. And we did. There's one slight snag when you cross the 40-foot drain that the bridge was a bit rickety, but we got over that. Then we carried on, again on disused railway lines, basically to Somersham, and then down by the main road to Cambridge. I think when Colin does his bit, he will tell you this, the route's totally changed now. But in fact, in the early years, I say that we could use the disused railway line between March and Chatteris. That was soon built over. We ended up going up on the old road, that wasn't the bypass road, because that was, it was a bit more windy and longer, but it was at least quiet. You walk through Wimblington and Doddington. And then we thought, well, that's it, we're not going to do it ever again. And then we suddenly found that a couple of years later we were doing it again, and we seem to have done it most years ever since. I personally stopped doing it when I was about 50, so in about 2005 or something. I'd been gradually winding down. I mean, instead of completing the march, I'd at various stages given up earlier, so places like Willingham and so forth, as I got more and more decrepit. Now I'm certainly too decrepit to do a full march. The early marches, I mean, they used to use the main road again between Erith and Willingham, and that's extremely busy. It's a busy main road, and there were various diversions from that. There was a footpath which we could use, but I think the bridge now is no longer there, so it's not possible. And Colin, again, the modern march has a totally different route, which avoids this nasty bit. That was the worst bit. As for the very first march, I mean, what I do remember was there was some snow. I mean, this was not heavy snow, but a few flakes of snow as we were coming in towards Erith. We got back at about 8 in the evening. We actually did quite a fast pace. We had lunch at the Crafty Fox pub, which is no longer a pub, just south of Chatteris. And that was a regular pub lunch place for quite a long time, though gradually we switched to eating in Chatteris.
So I guess maybe you could explain how that route has changed. I guess some of it is just due to places becoming built up.
Yeah, so the old route was predominantly on a road, and roads just got busy over the years. Crossing the Ouse is always the problem, because there's very few crossings. So there was a convenient bridge that wasn't a footpath, and We'd had a few years off and I relaunched it in 2017. And at that point, the bridge was basically a few boards over the river. So I went over it myself, but didn't think I was going to dare take anybody else over it. And the bridge had gone the following year. We found a convenient footpath which crosses the Ouse a few miles west. And it's rather more pleasant and avoids this very busy road. So the current route is roughly half along the side of roads and half along footpaths. But the goal is to get south as fast as possible. What Jonathan hasn't said is it's a very long way. It's about 30 miles to Cambridge. Nowadays, we say that people have finished if they get to Histon or Girton, which are two villages just on the north side of Cambridge, which makes it 28 miles. But you still don't want to put extra miles in.
I suppose it's one of those things when you're walking, 28 miles is a lot. So if you do any detours away from built up areas or to find nicer paths, it certainly clocks up extra miles.
No, absolutely. Yeah. We've had a problem in the last few years that the disused railway near Somersham, there's now a lake over it. So there was a lake with a footpath around, but the lake seems to have got worse and worse. And this year, it's 2 foot deep at that point, I think. Local people are trying to get it reopened because it was a very convenient bridleway, as well as part of officially the Greenwich Meridian Long Distance Trail. Although I don't know if people are trying to do this anymore. So we've had to find diversions around that. We had a couple of very wet winters, so we want to avoid some of the very muddy footpaths. So we adjust it slightly depending on weather conditions as well.
Is it something that has local awareness? I mean, are motorists aware that this is taking place and now understand what to do?
Not for motorists. I mean, we don't have enough people for that to be an issue. Or we haven't had enough people. I'll come back to the fact that we've got much, much bigger this year. I think we've mostly been fairly under the radar for many years. We've had a mailing list and it's spread by word of mouth. And a lot of people seem to have heard of it. But normally the response is that still going? You must be completely mad to do that. I'll never do that. But this year, the response seems to be, can I come and can I bring 8 of my friends? So I'm not at all sure what's changed. We've had some awareness in March as well. So for many, many years, it was a case of us catching the train to March, leaving at sort of before anything really opened and not really having much impact on the town at all. But we've got some regulars from March, and this year the mayor of March, who hadn't known about it for some previous years, wanted to make a bigger thing of it. So he came to the station and did a speech and sent us off. So I think in March we are well known. I think the pubs in Chatteris know who we are because we turn up to the same pub every year. I think beyond that, not so much. I mean, it's been a group of about 10 to 15 people just walking down the fens. So it isn't that obvious. If there were 100 of us, then yes, it would be a big thing.
There are one or two books which actually mention the March as sort of one of the curiosities of Cambridge. In particular, there's one that mentions, the notorious one of 2002, which Colin and I were both on, where we had what's called a fen blow. And that is when it's very high winds, it whisks up all the soil into the air. And if you're doing a march that day, you get totally covered in soil and muck and all sorts of stuff. So we were doing this, and there were actually 4 of us on the bits just south of Chatteris, probably not very far from the Crafty Fox, but on the railway line. And we gave up. We basically got to a certain point and said, this is ridiculous, and made our way back to Chatteris, calling in the pub to sort of clean up a bit and get all the muck off us. I mean, fen blows don't happen very often. They happen every few years, I guess. And we just happened to catch one that particular day.
I almost got hit by a dead pigeon in March as well. So about half a mile in, there was this pigeon dropped on my feet. I assumed it had blown into a building, but had it hit me on the head, that would have been quite nasty. It was very, very windy and gale force winds. And the minute we got out into really open country, it was getting very unpleasant.
Well, that's right, because it's a notoriously flat part of the country. It's got nothing to stop it, I guess.
Yes. So this year, we actually marked the point we crossed the first contour line. You don't cross a contour line until 9 miles into the walk. And the first contour line you cross is the zero contour line. On the original route, you didn't get above 10 metres until the last mile. Unfortunately, the detour goes over a slight hill, so we do get 18 metres about halfway down, which feels like a bit of a cheat. And you do actually notice that hill, but it is very, very flat.
You mentioned getting older, and there's no mention of the word Cambridge in the title. I guess you could just do a couple of loops of March, couldn't you?
You could. I mean, we have had at least 2 which went on variant routes to Ely. So we have tried other things, which is a little bit, I'm not sure, I think it's slightly shorter.
We did have one early marcher who got to Ely by mistake. He missed the train to march, and so he started walking behind us, maybe an hour behind us. He got into Chatteris, didn't know the way, and instead of going down towards Cambridge, he actually ended up in Ely and gave up in Ely. Usually, if people go to Ely, it's deliberate.
You mentioned that first one being the typical student thing where we're young and a little bit crazy. Who typically participates in it now? Do you get people from far and wide?
This year has been very different because I think they got heard about in the university. So previously, it's been a sort of core group of maybe 12 to 20 people who are steadily getting a bit on the older side. So there's a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, a few into their 50s. This year, we had, I think, about 20 university students who were quite young and excited, and they were playing music on the way down, which I've never heard before. So we marched into Hissing at the end to the sounds of ABBA, which is not really my walking culture, but certainly helped us motivate us down the last mile. It has shifted. I've been doing it since I was an undergraduate at 18, and I think it has shifted in tone a bit. We had the oldest marcher to date this year, who was 64, and there's several of us who are doing it over 50. But there is a younger contingent as well, so it's a bit of a mix of the two. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes in future years.
There's mention on the website about postcards. Could you explain the relevance of the postcards and how you can find postcards now? Because I don't think that up here, they don't seem to exist anymore.
The very first march, we sent a postcard to the maths department, pure maths department in Cambridge, just signed by our real names as a mark of the fact we'd actually started post-it for March. And then it became a habit every year to send a postcard. We would gradually start using false names and silly names, sometimes with a theme. Colin, what happens nowadays? No, I got sent a postcard myself, actually.
Yeah, no, we've kept up the tradition. We thought we like this. And that certainly was going when I started. I think just as to the silliness. So you can buy postcards if you know where to look. So some years we haven't managed it. There is a shop in March which does sell postcards. So we do have a stock. This year we had to use a Mother's Day card because I couldn't find a postcard big enough. We have various traditions that are stuck. It's not clear whether anybody in the maths department knows what this card is anymore.
Most will have retired because, I mean, I've retired and they would all have been older than me at that time. Mm.
As you do, you tend to sort of point out landmarks and see what's changed over the years. So we still regularly point out the house that used to have lots of gnomes. So there was a house about in Doddington where they had sort of something like 50 gnomes out the front. Unfortunately, they must have moved away. The new owners didn't keep the tradition up, but we still point out that house every year. So we point that at every year and, yeah, trying to keep the traditions going.
You need to drop off a plastic gnome in the garden every year that you go by and see what the reaction to that is.
Oh, that would be great, yes.
I'm also intrigued a little bit by the non-finishers.
Well, public transport's pretty bad in that area.
Yeah.
We generally, in the past, certainly used to have people volunteering as a sort of backup support, so somebody with a car who wasn't going to walk. So maybe sometime I'll come along and do that.
I mean, I think the general problem seems to be footwear. I think most people who start it could reasonably finish it. So at the minute, you can give up in the last 10 miles quite happily because you walk all over. It's something called the Cambridge Busway, which is a disused route that's turned into a sort of guided bus thing. Unfortunately, you have to get a taxi. As Jonathan said, there are no longer any useful buses. There used to be a few. People are going to drop out. So there's people like me who will tend to be the back marker and make sure that people do get home safely.
It is fun, but there are also kind of some serious logistics associated with it as well, I guess.
Yeah.
There was once a problem, in fact, that there was no train to march. We managed to get a special bus arranged for us. There have been railways every other time, I think.
We've had quite a few problems in recent years because they pretend to have engineering work and things. Or you can read the website and we log the problems we've had each year sometimes. One year we ended up just getting two shared taxis from Cambridge because there wasn't the viable rail placement bus. And that turned out to be competitive with the rail fare when you get five in a taxi.
What would you say have been some of the personal highlights of the walks?
That's a difficult one because they all sort of blend into each other after a few years.
Well, the tradition is that we don't do anything useful on the march. So I think we got about 20 years in before we managed to keep that one going. So we found a library card on the disused railway 2 miles from anywhere. And one of the party was a librarian, so I managed to return it into the library system and it got back to the owner. And this year we had somebody along who was doing a PhD on the impact of march music in contemporary music. So she came along with someone to do some field studies. She recorded some of the ambient sounds She got me to sing the march, 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 and she talked to people about their experiences of marching. We may well get a credit in a PhD when she finished it. Yeah, I think personal highlight, apart from completing it many times, so I've done it 19, I think Jonathan's done it 23 times. So it's always a serious number of miles doing this thing. You're spending all day meeting random and generally interesting people and having good chats with them. Yeah, you make friends doing this bizarre thing.
Well, at least one married couple actually met on the march. They came independently.
I didn't know that, yes.
I got sent an email by the lady saying, I've just met a very interesting friend on the march. And I was trying to work out which one it was, but she married him in the end. This is the same lady who used to like taking photographs for something called a Geograph website. The idea is every square kilometre on the Ordnance Survey map, you know, is labelled. And the idea is that you want to have a photo taken in every single little box. And some of them, of course, are quite well away from civilization, like some of the ones on the March, March, March. So she would stop and she would walk sort of a few extra 100 meters or so to get into a different box so she could take a photo and then come back and rejoin the walk.
The evolution of technology, you're mentioning about the 1970s, I would imagine people had to talk to each other then, whereas now everybody has a smartphone.
The smartphone don't come out. I mean, the advantage we had this year was that we couldn't have done in the 70s with so many new people, is we gave everybody a GPX track and said, this is the route. Probably about half the people were able to self-navigate and not get lost. But nowadays, once you get to the last 10 miles, it's sort of a free-for-all and you've got your own speed. So you get finishing times varying by up to an hour, depending on how strong a finisher you are.
The early ones, as you say, there's no way of contacting people. So we tended to stay in a bunch, which has some disadvantages because it means that some people are walking too slowly and some people are walking too fast. When you got near the end, it used to end up with walking across the airfield at Oakington. And by that stage, it was getting dark usually as well, and people were well separated, and it was a free-for-all, really.
There's a May version. What's that one?
So this is called the May Maney Mania. So Maney is a village halfway between March and Ely, so it's in the same area. It's one of these places that was spared by the beaching cuts. At that point, it was a tiny village which still had a railway line. And you could do a slightly shorter walk to Cambridge. So you're talking about between 20 and 25 miles rather than 28. The challenge of Maney was that there were only three trains a day. So if you wanted to do a walk from it, you had to catch a train from Cambridge Station at something like 6 in the morning. So it was that or lunchtime. You had to do a walk which was silly by the nature of the early start. So some years you effectively got to lunch and you were more or less done. This hadn't happened for a long time, but in 2021, we couldn't hold a march because of COVID, but you could hold a mania. So we relaunched it as an alternative, but that's been popular enough to keep going as well. Slightly less iconic, but sort of similar kind of walk.
Somehow more pleasant because you're walking more in the countryside and less in the roads. You're walking by the Bedford River at one stage and you have a long bit, you have the long dikes, which is quite nice.
All right, great. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
The length is fortuitously a very good length for a challenge walk. So 28 miles, it's a very long way, but it's a way that people could generally manage. So it's convenient the march is where it is. If it was 20 miles, it would be a bit boring. If it was 40 miles, it would be impossible. So I think just the choice of location probably speaks to its longevity.
I think that was part of the reason why we thought it was a bit of a silly idea when we started, because 30 miles is quite a substantial walk, especially if you're not used to. And also, it's pretty much on the flat, so it's not as interesting as sort of climbing some of the mountains or whatever. But nothing stopped us being silly in those days, so we did it. And it turned out that some of the people, at least one person, said, oh, I wish I'd known about this, I'd have come with you on the first march. And so we more or less felt morally obliged to run another one a couple of years later. The length is a very appropriate length. At that time of the year, March, you know, it's getting dark, six-ish or something. So it's quite difficult to get back in daylight. Do you get back in daylight these days, Colin, or not?
No, it's usually about an hour after twilight. I think I've only done one that got back in daylight. That's the second one I did, and there were two of us going extremely fast. So we finished by about 6:30. But normally you're into twilight in at least, and probably a bit of darkness, but not too much.
Yeah, I mean, we tended to finish about 8. Once we didn't finish till about 11, I think, because we decided to stop in a few pubs as well on the way. Mm-hmm. You'd have to start very early to do it entirely in daylight. I think you'd need a train about 6 o'clock or something.
And then you've got problems with lunch. The problem is always the lunch stop, because Chatteris is after 10 miles.
Mm.
And then the next place you could stop, plausibly assumption, of about 16. And it's probably too far for a morning. That's why the Crafty Fox was quite a nice location, because it was 2 miles south of Chatteris. So it was a good distance.
I can just imagine all the varied weather conditions over the years, as March in the UK can be pretty unpredictable to say the least, but at least it's a flat part of the country. Still, the distance is pretty impressive, and I really love the idea of sending postcards. When I was in university, a friend and I had a competition every summer where we would send each other the most mundane postcards we could find on our travels. I still have the winning postcard he sent. It was a blurry black and white postcard of a pipeline crossing the North Yorkshire Moors. It was truly awful. It's probably the only one that they ever sold. It's the Easter holidays for schools here for the next 2 weeks, so that means hopefully lots of walking, because the weather's going to be good, and not sitting in front of the television watching inane YouTube videos of watching other people watch videos. I guess I'm just too old to understand. So we will be back next week. I hope you enjoyed this week's WalkingPost.com podcast, and I hope you have a great week with at least one nice walk in it. And until next time, happy trails! Walking Post from WalkingPost.com is an Air Coastal Media Limited production.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.